This program was first broadcast on Canterbury's access media station, Plains FM, and was made with the assistance of New Zealand On Air.
Hello and welcome to 3-Pre-1-Cast. This podcast is your pit stop for a comedic but educational take on the crazy and illustrious world of Formula One.
We will take you through the latest news and happenings, while also offering our views and perspectives on the key moments, both on and off the track. So, to quote the great David Croft of Sky Sports F1,
it's lights out and away we go.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of 3-Pre-1-Cast. It's the Formula One podcast where we recap the week's events, the upcoming events, and we have a few extra little goodies to get to later on in the show. So this week I'm joined by Josh.
And hello there.
Stephen is away again, unfortunately.
Away.
His work
tragically
has meant that he is not with us.
He
but
is occupied.
One fortnight away and he'll be back and you'll be listening to his sweet, sweet voice. So
yes, and we might potentially be able to catch him later.
We might, right at the end. We're going to give it a go. We're going to give him a little prank call potentially, so make sure you stay tuned.
We don't know anything about how to use the phone. Well, we've had a quick teaching lesson 5 minutes before, but yes,
the studio is too complicated for us is what we're trying to say.
Exactly.
So, you know, we'll give it a go, but it could be a fail, which is, I guess, also pretty entertaining. So we'll just roll with it, whatever happens.
But, exactly.
Josh, how have you been?
I've been very good, thank you. Got up at, was it 6 a.m.?
6 a.m.
Yesterday.
Was it yesterday? Man, when you get up that early, it just feels like one whole
it's a different
big day.
Yeah, no, I think it was yesterday for the Canadian Grand Prix, and you got up as well, didn't you?
I did. I was house-sitting out at my parents' place, but managed to prize myself awake. How did you manage to stay up throughout the whole thing?
Like, I did.
You found it entertaining enough?
It was entertaining throughout, I found.
Yeah.
Yeah. We had a few DNFs throughout and some changes in the...
No, of course, we're talking about the Canada Grand Prix, which happened Monday morning, and it was a pretty decent race overall, I'd say.
Yeah, me too. I would say so too. There wasn't really much doubt from the start who was going to win the race.
Yeah, that's true.
But, of course, I was rooting for Alonso to do a little bit better than he might have, starting in the front row for the first time since 2012.
Did you have money on him?
Yes, so I did a little cheeky $25 bets. Not on fully on Alonso, luckily. I spread out my bets and I made it back by betting that Bottas would get in the points, which he did. And I also bet something else. I'll think of
it. You diversified your portfolio.
I diversified my portfolio. Oh, I did bet that Alonso would be leading after the first lap, because I thought maybe he could get like a cheeky getaway, but he didn't.
I think if it was wet, you would have had a good shot, because I was listening to the commentary. They were saying that sometimes starting P2 on the Canada track is actually you get the best run into the first corner.
Yeah, that's what I was exactly hoping for, with the qualifying being a wet track. But no, it was dry. So
it was so dry. It was like bright sunshine. Yeah, at quali, it was just pouring around in grey everywhere. So
it was
a bit crazy. But I mean, look, nevertheless, Max Verstappen won. He had a bit of a close call towards the end with Carlos Sainz.
Yes, so the red flag, or the safety car that happened, was it Tsunoda's crash that brought out another safety car?
Yeah.
And that brought Sainz right back in it. And obviously Sainz is yet to get a win.
Yeah.
He's great at getting second place, but he's yet to get himself a win. And it's funny because this was Sainz and Verstappen's 150th race.
Was it?
Yep, they started in 2015 together and have each raced every single one since.
Didn't they start in the same team with Sauber?
They did. It was Sauber. But there was, I think they were both involved with the Red Bull program, so they were what AlphaTauri used to be.
Toro Rosso, sorry, not Sauber.
Yeah, so it was Toro Rosso.
And then Sainz went to McLaren, and then Ferrari. Max went up through to Red Bull.
Yeah, that's right. So they've been going for 7 years, 150 races, but obviously Verstappen is now on his 26th win, and Sainz is yet to secure
get one.
But he's got himself some podiums.
He's got the car for it.
He's got the car for it.
He will at some point this season. He'll win it.
You reckon?
He'll win one.
Yeah?
At least one.
This season? Okay,
at
fair
least.
Enough. Yeah, we
at
still
least.
Have plenty of races to go.
I should try and find a bet on that.
I mean, there's all sorts of bets you can do. It's crazy.
Yeah.
But it's funny that George Russell managed to win before Sainz, even in a Williams.
Yeah, that's crazy. But, I mean, more on George later on, because we're going to go in depth on him. Mm-hmm. But another sort of slight shock, well, kind of a shock, I guess, when we had two major sort of, well, we had a few DNFs, obviously, but Lewis Hamilton up onto the podium, third place.
And it's funny, because imagine last year, him on third is like
disaster.
It's a disaster. he's annoyed.
Yeah.
He's like saying to his team, "Oh, look, unlucky guys." This time, he is elated. He's stoked.
Yeah.
I mean, I was happy for him.
Yeah. No. Look. You know. To be honest, I think, you know, seeing him dominate for so many years, it got boring, and I think ultimately, people sort of were happy to see him lose. But no, I was definitely rooting for him towards the end. To clinch third and get back on the podium. Like, I guess it's nice to see. It would be cool if we get to a space, maybe it's next year, where we have a competitive Red Bull, Ferrari and Mercedes. Because at the moment, although the new rule change I think has been great, we're still seeing either Red Bull or a Ferrari winning a race. And it would be cool to add like another team into the mix.
Yeah, obviously a lot of Ferrari fans are hoping next year is their year. They just need to sort out their their engine power unit problems before they can hope to really be winning a constructors or a drivers championship. You can't be affording what's been happening to them.
I want to give a honourable shout to a team from Canada. Alfa Romeo continue their great season, finishing 7th and 8th. Zhou Guanyu racing really well, like overtakes galore. Like, he needed more pace out of the car to get the most out of it, but he raced so well.
He did. Yeah, actually, props to them, because Bottas, he started a lot further back than where he finished, and he managed to get through the field and hold in the top 10. So, yeah, the Alfa Romeos are doing really well, and it's quite funny, because ever since I became a fan of F1, back in, it was only a couple years ago, but Alfa Romeo was very much an afterthought team for me. Yeah. I didn't really, you know, their drivers didn't have much personality for a start. Kimi Raikkonen is not known for his good humour.
But he's almost that anti-character. Like, he's got such little charisma that it's funny.
That's true. Yeah, he was still someone, I mean, if you watch those, like, F1 promo vids, he has some funny interviews.
Yeah.
But, and then Giovinazzi...
He did his piece, didn't he?
He did his piece. I mean, he kind of reminds me a little bit of what Latifi is this year. Yeah, he's just not up to scratch, I feel. Yeah. Now, Latifi was a little bit of a meme coming into the Canadian Grand Prix, because it is his home race. And everyone kind of on the internet was pulling together to see if we could get him as a driver of the day.
Because I was looking at that. I didn't even see if he did win. He didn't.
Leclerc won it.
What was it, 14th to 5th? Like, far out.
Even further back. No, he started...
Oh, no, he started right at the back.
He started 19th.
Because he took a new engine, didn't he?
Yeah. Yeah, no, he started right at the back.
Yeah, that's right.
And got through. So, I mean, he obviously pulled ahead of Latifi in 18th and a bunch of others. So he did well. Yeah.
Struggled a lot, though. Like, I remember him coming on the radio a lot. He had no traction at the back end and was, frankly, I think he was just getting more and more annoyed at the car. And he was unable to pass, I think it was Ocon, for ages.
Well, because he was sliding around the place because he hadn't pitted for so long.
Yeah.
Speaking of, like, pit stop disasters, I mean, that's what Alonso's experienced, because they failed to pit him under two virtual safety cars, which would have been perfect. Because
saves 10 seconds every single one.
Yeah, yeah. So they pitted after all of that. So they got the standard 28-second pit stop. And then obviously after that was an actual safety car.
Yeah.
So Alonso did get a little bit screwed over.
Do you know what I wonder with Alonso? Because he's a veteran and he's, like, quite old. I wonder if they leave a lot of the strategy up to him in the car. Mm. And I know Mercedes do that a lot with Lewis. They actually ask him now, because he's probably complained a fair bit when they've got it wrong. But they say, they sort of come onto the radio and say, "We're thinking this, do you agree?" And maybe that's something that happens all throughout the team. But I imagine Alonso, surely he was like, he must have had a say in those decisions.
Maybe, though, in saying that, do you remember at the very end when Alonso wanted to overtake Ocon? Because he had a bit more pace.
Right. Yeah.
And they said, no, you know.
Yeah.
Because they knew that if Alonso overtook Ocon, then Bottas behind him could pass Ocon. Yeah. So they that was a case where they didn't care what Alonso had to say. But maybe in other cases.
I'd hope
someone... I don't really understand why you wouldn't pit under that second safety car. It was 30 laps in or so. It was time for a pit stop, and they didn't do it.
Yeah, so. And such a vital race. I mean, how good was quali for
Fernando for Alonso. Alonso?
But no, they butchered it. Another team that butchered it in Canada was McLaren, which has pained me to say, but they absolutely butchered it.
Absolutely.
Just no pace. Like, it wasn't even, they were a bit unlucky. No, they were just slow.
Even, like, so Norris was just stuck at the back of the grid.
15th, mate. That's 15th with three DNFs. So, you know, and those was Perez, Schumacher, and Tsunoda, who were all higher up the grid than him. So it could have been a dire race. Like,
That's true.
He could have been 18th.
Which might have been one of his worst finishes ever.
Yeah.
You know, I've never even heard of Norris being back there. Yeah.
Ricardo qualified well.
What was he at?
Where did he qualify? Let me just pull that up. Ricardo qualified 9th. I guess that's not
bad. That's actually not bad.
It's not terrible considering of the race pace. He finished 11th. There's no promise there. Like, there's just, you know, like, it was depressing watching them just gradually fall down the field. So, don't know what's going on there, but it was a distinct lack of pace.
Yeah, that would be a very disappointing one. I mean, Aston Martin had a decent strategy of, like, kind of going long, pitting early and then going long.
Yeah.
And they managed to secure 1 point for Strolley in 10th, which, you know, like, those kind of teams, I'm sure, if they're taking home points, they're happy.
It was his Grand Prix as well.
Yes, it was the Canadian. Yeah,
I feel like it's bad when, like, Latifi got more of the sort of, like, accolades for it being his home Grand Prix. I mean, does, like, Stroll...
just forgetting about Stroll.
Stroll's arguably twice the better driver than him.
Yeah, you could definitely say that. Yeah, I'd say Stroll is the better driver.
Yeah.
So it's quite funny that people forget he's Canadian too. Yeah. Oh, well, I'm kind of happy for him to get a point there.
Yeah, no, that was cool. Like, he seems to be working hard. Like, he's still, you know, he's got Vettel alongside him, and he seems to sometimes be up and around and sometimes beating him. So, I mean, look, what more can you do in a car that's clearly not very good?
Yeah.
You know, he's doing what he can.
Speaking of that, you know, I don't think we had a chance to talk about Azerbaijan. I mean, I don't think we should go too deeply into that.
You're right, though.
Vettel in sixth from Azerbaijan was pretty impressive.
Yeah, that was cool. No, that was cool. I mean, it's nice to see him. I feel like... in the coming years as well, as Lewis ages as well, and you've got people like Alonso, to see the veterans, like, up on the podium is always really cool.
Yeah.
It's like a big throwback, really, and there's so many young guys coming through that it's nice to see, like, old names up there.
Well, that's exactly, I guess, how we felt about Hamilton on the podium, eh?
Yeah.
Like, he's almost 100%. A veteran at this point.
Yeah. But no, Azerbaijan was good. I mean, look, Russell got third. So, look, Mercedes are in the points again. Like, they're being very consistent.
Oh, was it? I think Russell got fifth. It was Hamilton that got third. Oh, sorry, Azerbaijan. Sorry, yes.
Yeah. So Russell third, Hamilton fourth.
Yeah.
Do you know who else had a bad race in Canada?
Who?
Pierre Gasly.
Yeah.
Because he was fifth in Azerbaijan.
Was he? Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. And I mean, Haas as well.
Yeah.
Qualifying so good.
Yeah.
And then having some bad luck, I suppose, because Magnussen, and I think this was quite common of Magnussen, he kind of gets himself damaged somehow and it screws his entire race up.
He's kind of like Grosjean used to be, you know. He just always is just getting
wrong.
Entanglements and clipping people and forcing retirements. Yeah, it's not
him and Hamilton had a thing at a few races back which got him to the back of the grid too.
Yeah,
I mean, I was a bit disappointed. I had some money. I actually had when I looked at Michael Schumacher, obviously this was very promising first points race for him. He DNF'd. I said he's either going to get top six or he's going to DNF first. So I put a bet on him being the first to retire, and I put a bet on him being top six.
Was he?
Perez DNF'd two laps before him. So that was gutting. Because you get $16 per $1 you put on a first driver. So he did DNF like I thought, but Perez somehow, I mean, his power unit or something. Transition box. So.
Oh no! It was like a hydraulic failure. I think they said, and that was the same thing that happened to Sainz in Azerbaijan.
It's interesting. So even the Red Bull is not being very consistent.
Not bulletproof, but
it's Mercedes that have the consistent car.
But a slow car.
I mean,
it's warping so much.
I mean, Hamilton. you know, was obviously complaining about his back.
Yeah.
After the Azerbaijan, or should we just call it the Baku race?
Baku race.
Yeah.
Can't mispronounce that.
Yeah, he was complaining about that. He got voted driver of the day for pushing through some back pain.
He looked like in a lot of pain, to be fair. But pretty quickly after that, Mercedes came out with an idea that the rules should be changed and the car should be modified to help the drivers feel a little bit safer in there, which is fair enough, I think. Like, if it's becoming that bad where some drivers are, you know, gingerly climbing out of the car, like, yeah, maybe it is time to have a real look at it. But Mercedes seems to be the only one having it to that degree, and for 5-6 years, with the rules they had, they made the best car, and frankly nobody could complain about that. So just because they're struggling, should we adjust the rules? I don't know.
I don't think so. I mean, even Horner had to admit that he would have said the same if he was in Mercedes' shoes. But it is kind of their fault for failing to make the car, even though every other team seemed to be fine. Like, the drivers agreed that the porpoising was an issue, but no one was having it as bad as Mercedes. So it's up to Mercedes to sort that out. And they did. And they were doing a lot of trial and error, even in this Canadian, in the practice races.
That's right.
And Hamilton was the one that said that the car was getting worse after the Friday practice.
And then they matched his settings to George's settings for the actual race itself. And, well, obviously pretty good result. So why are they testing it on Lewis? Or are they just trying to, you know, try and tailor the car more to him? It seems odd, doesn't it?
No, what I think is that both of them had different things trying, and whichever one worked, they would just switch over. Yep. I don't think they're favouring Russell there.
Yeah, okay, that makes sense. Yeah, doing a good old A-B test. Now, that's cool. And, of course, up and coming, we have the Silverstone Grand Prix. Mm-hmm. So they'll be packing up the Formula One circus and going over to Britain and racing in South England, which will
it's
be
a great race. Yeah, very exciting.
Very exciting.
Obviously, Hamilton's done really well there in the past.
Yep.
We'll have to see.
Do you remember last season, that huge crash between Lewis and Max?
That was kind of, that was the race that sort of really showed us that this was going to be like a fighting with tooth and nail kind of.
It bettered things like crazy.
Yeah, because controversially, Hamilton nudged into Verstappen, probably by accident. Well, their side of the story is that it was a pure accident.
Yeah.
Christian Horner and Red Bull's side is that it was purposeful. Verstappen spun off quite a bad crash.
Well, it was on a flying corner. It was one of the fastest points in the track, just after the home straight, I believe. I think, from memory, the corner's called Beckett's, but I'm probably going to get that wrong. Anyway, it was on one of the really fast corners, how did that work? Was Lewis on the inside, or was Max on the inside?
I want to say that Verstappen went on the outside.
Yeah, and then and then Lewis sort of gradually moved across, but potentially because he was going around the corner, the cars sort of.
And they're saying that it was Hamilton's corner.
And anyway, it looked like they just nicked, but it basically sent Verstappen off into the barriers at 90 miles an hour, and it was pretty scary because I've never seen actually a car travel so far and keep such constant speed into the barriers. So
And he did go to hospital for a checkup.
Yeah,
and while he was in hospital, Hamilton controversially was celebrating really hard his win, and a few fans were a little upset at that. But I think that's just how it goes.
Well, it's his home Grand Prix. You're always going to celebrate that one hard.
Yeah.
But yes, I know that's going to be exciting. I'm sure. I think the race is going to be at like 4 a.m. or something.
Mm-hmm.
So that'll be a tough one to watch. But
do you know what was quite a wholesome interaction? Because obviously Verstappen and Hamilton are arch rivals,
especially after last season.
But the cool down room is a new little feature.
I love it.
Yeah,
so good.
It's quite funny seeing the dynamics.
Yeah.
Play out. And you know, Verstappen and Hamilton had a little moment. They were looking at the TV, and because there was only one point when Verstappen and Hamilton were racing, and almost immediately Hamilton went into the pits, or was it one of them went into the pits?
Oh no, that's right. It was Hamilton was coming around the corner, and Verstappen was coming out of the pits, and Hamilton just got in front, but it was very close, and they kind of, I think Verstappen tried to sort of play into it. But it was close.
But it was a very short-lived stint.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, here we go, rivals back at it. But they didn't race for long.
No.
But in the cool-down room, they kind of talked about that, and it was just a bit wholesome to see
it's wholesome.
And be civil.
Yeah. Is it? Maybe they need to sort the audio out there because it's like really quiet, but it's almost like a little bit awkward because they're all sitting there, maybe because they're knackered, and there's just a lot of silence.
Oh, it is awkward, actually. Yeah. I mean, like, they're just all sitting there watching. I mean, the TV helps. They've got the highlights going, and you can see them interact a bit. But yeah, the audio keeps cutting out, so it's hard to know fully what's going on there.
I'm sure they'll work on it, but...
But Hamilton, as usual, he kind of makes his appearance, and then he ducks out. He doesn't stay long.
No.
But that's fine. I think maybe that avoids any more awkwardness than necessary.
No, that's true. But no, we'll eagerly be watching Silverstone in the coming weeks. I think we've got a week break.
Yeah, it's 2 weeks from now. Yeah. Yeah,
so fair enough, but it's always sad. Don't have the Formula One to look forward to this week.
No. So should we do a little couple one-off segments then?
We should. Now, all right. I know you've got a particularly favourite driver at the moment, Josh.
That is right. So George Russell has really made a name for himself this year, Russley. When I entered in, I had just missed his rookie debut. So I didn't quite catch on to the hype.
Well, when you first became
I was first F1 fan, I didn't pay as much attention to George Russell. I mean, a lot of people were saying he's a super talent, he deserves a better car than Williams, and eventually I did catch on to this fact. Yeah. I mean, he has shown this talent this year, but it's always been clear. So after this season, seeing how well he's doing, as Mr. Consistent, Mr. Sunday, always pulling through in the top five. He's had 3 P3s, 3 P4s, and 3 P5s in order. So it's always been P5, P4, 3 P3, P4, P5, P3. Like, it's always one after the other. So it's quite interesting to see if that pattern will continue. Yeah. So his next one has to be a P5 to keep the passion going.
Right, okay.
As long as he stays top five, though, he stays.
I mean, he wouldn't complain, though. I mean, in the car he's got, like, this consistency is fantastic.
It is so impressive. Yeah. And it's like, it's really cool to see him being quite competitive with Lewis Hamilton.
But it's not even that he's doing this in a bad car. He's adjusted to a bad car and is remaining consistent.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's impressive.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So, I mean, to start Russell's story off, he was born in Norfolk, in 1998. So he's just a year older than us.
Yeah.
It's hard to imagine. I mean, Verstappen started at 16 years old.
He's like 23 now.
Yeah, I mean, they have been like, it's very impressive. They're earning millions of dollars, and they have, you know.
Yeah, just flying around the world, you know, racing.
Living the best life, meeting cool people.
Yeah.
Yeah, having cool partners.
Yeah. Very cool.
Yeah, so he was born, and so he took up karting at the age of 7, having already fallen in love with racing due to his older brother being involved in competitive karting. And he moved up the ranks very quickly. I'm going to skip some of the earlier stuff.
That's fine.
But so he stormed through the 2017 F3 Championship to win that. And then the next year, he won the 2018 Formula 2 Championship under some pressure. He had Norris alongside him in second.
Oh, wow, okay.
Yeah, and I think Albon was in third. So pulled ahead of them. Yeah, so he obviously... Mercedes saw the potential quite quickly with him, and they put him in as young drivers.
So it wasn't until he won FP2 that he went
to Mercedes? It was actually 2017 that Mercedes signed him on.
Okay.
And then 2018 he went on to win.
They recognised his potential very early.
Very early. Yeah. So, I mean, he came into the junior program, but at that point Russell was actually looking at joining the DTM, which... I don't know much about the DTM, but it looks like it's some kind of German...
I have heard of it. Is it touring car?
It's called Deutsche Tourenwagen Masters. Yeah. It's a grand touring car series sanctioned by blah, blah, blah. Yeah, so it's based in Germany with rounds elsewhere.
He nearly went touring car.
Yeah, that was on the table for him until he got this offer to join the young program.
He's glad that he didn't take
it. F1 is far more prestigious.
Yeah, a lot more lucrative.
A lot more lucrative as well once you get up there. So he did that, and then his rookie season in Williams in 2019, he out-qualified his teammate Robert Kubica in all 21 races. So Robert Kubica was obviously a seasoned racer. To out-qualify him in all 21 races in his rookie season.
Yeah.
So that, of course, shows a lot of promise very early on.
Yeah. Yeah. Because Robert Kubica was... He did rally at some point, but he was like a Formula One icon for a wee while, because he was just... I think he was just in the sport for ages. I don't know if he ever... I know he definitely did get some podiums.
Oh, yeah, so...
I don't know how influential he was, but, yeah, it was a little bit before our time.
He's a Polish motorsports racer who competed in Formula One. Between 2006 and 2009, he drove for Sauber F1 team.
Right.
And then he was on to Williams.
Oh, maybe he wasn't so far up there.
Actually, I don't know the facts fully there.
Do you reckon one Formula day we'll ever do like a Robert Kubica in-depth look? We look at like three seasons at Sauber.
I don't think we'll be too interested in that. It does say that 2010 he went to Renault.
Yeah.
2011, and yeah, then he returned later on.
I have a weird fact about Robert Kubica.
Oh, okay, Kubica. Is it cool?
It's Kubica.
Oh, sorry.
Now it's Kubica, okay. But it's definitely spelt Kubica.
Yeah, okay, sure.
No, he had like I think it was in rally, he had like a terrible accident. And he had a lot of deformities in his hand, and I think it's his left, one of his hands. And then when he made his return to Formula One, there was a lot of concerns because he had such little control and like strength in one of the hands. He was essentially racing with one hand.
Serious.
And I mean, you know, he still smashed in laps and, you know, put in a pretty good work.
That's actually really impressive.
Yeah, because he stood in last season for Alfa Romeo on a few races, I think, when... Who was out? Somebody was out.
Maybe it was Raikkonen.
Yeah, Raikkonen had... That's right. I think it was like Raikkonen had COVID. Kubica came in.
Oh,
and was
man.
Racing with like one hand. And like, you know, he didn't do well, but he...
He still did
he didn't
it.
Crash.
No,
like,
no.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So, yeah. So, he's quite a big name then in F1.
Yeah,
well,
I think so. I think he's pretty...
He's a veteran.
He's a cult hero.
Perhaps. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, Russell really blew him out of the park. And so, very quickly, once... Russell smashed him in all 21. Yeah. They replaced Kubica with Latifi, who...
Oh, it's been a worldie.
He's been the GOAT. The GOATifi. Yeah. No, so obviously Russell has far outperformed Latifi as well, so at Williams. So it was always clear that Russell was a great talent. Though, like Schumacher this year, it took a long time for Russell to secure his first points. He missed out at the first Tuscan Grand Prix in 2020, looking good in ninth until a second red flag came up due to Stroll's crash. He got off the line poorly and couldn't get past Vettel's Ferrari in 10th, so that was his first look at the points. At Imola, Russell crashed out from the 10th place while following a safety car.
I remember that. He was trying to warm his tyres and he just lost it into the wall.
Heartbreak.
That is heartbreak.
It's an incident that he described as the biggest mistake of his career.
Yeah.
Of course,
I mean,
like
fair,
that
fair.
Was, you know,
he was literally going like 70 kilometers an hour,
so bad. Yeah, so that was So after that, he got the opportunity to replace Lewis Hamilton for a one-off Mercedes appearance at Sakhir 2020 when the reigning champ was struck down by COVID-19.
Oh yeah,
this was very exciting. This was looking like a very good opportunity to impress his Mercedes.
Show what he's got, you know.
Yep. He missed out on pole by just 0.026 seconds.
Jeez.
And then he still outraced his rival, you know, for the seat, Valtteri Bottas. Only a bungled pit stop and a heartbreaking late puncture prevented a near certain maiden win, they say.
That's right.
Very upsetting.
That was so sad.
Yeah, because when he finished, he went, "I don't know what to say, guys." I think what he wanted to say was, "Why did you screw up my pit stop?" Because,
but it's that awkward level because he was obviously trying to position himself well for the seat, but then the team he's really desperately trying to get into kind of screwed him
they
over.
Did.
So it was this really like. You could definitely tell he was like,
guys,
fuming, but wanted to be polite about it.
Yeah, that's it. That was the dynamic. And that actually continued with Mercedes. So in 2021, the heartbreak seemed to continue. He had a crash at Imola with Bottas. And this was another weird dynamic with Mercedes because he pushed himself super hard to overtake Bottas because obviously...
Was this at Monza or...?
This was at Imola.
Imola.
Yeah. He wanted to impress Mercedes. He wanted to go, hey, look, I can pass Bottas in a Williams.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, so he really pushed himself and they collided, both out of the race. Now, the problem here is he did not display himself well to Mercedes with his behaviour. This is probably a low point for me as a fan of Russell. He blamed Bottas fully, and once he got out of the car, he kind of went over to Bottas, and instead of checking if he was okay, he kind of just went, "What are you doing? What are you doing, man? Like, you screwed that up." But yeah, so he was a little bit of a bad sport, a little bit of a poor sport.
Didn't
there.
He, you know...
What was that?
I swear he smacked him on the helmet.
Oh, maybe he did.
I swear, I swear he went up to him and, like, yeah, everyone thought he was going to, like, see if Bottas was okay, and he just smacked him on the head.
Maybe, do you think he maybe smacked the car?
Oh, maybe it was like,
I feel
he smacked
like
the
helmet's
halo.
Pretty, yeah, the helmet's pretty ballsy. I don't know, I mean, maybe he did that.
Maybe he did, like, I kind of want to have a look.
Yeah, maybe have a look at that while I speak here, but yeah, he really didn't impress Toto Wolff there at all with his conduct.
You can't really afford to do that, you know, like, because also, like, Formula One's so big now where it's a brand, you know, like, it's, you, and if you're sort of seen to be like that on the grid, you're not putting yourself in a good step for all the sponsors and stuff like that. So, yeah, I'm sure it did kind of dampen his likelihood of getting the seat at some point.
Yeah, exactly. So that was a low point, but Russell bounced back quickly. Actually, one thing I should add just came to my mind that we never mentioned that Schumacher at this recent Canadian Grand Prix also missed out on the points once again. So he has been struggling a lot. That one was more of just an engine failure as well, gearbox failure or something. So he missed out on the points. But that's why I kind of draw the parallel between Russell and Schumacher. They both really struggle to get points even when they have good opportunities.
Yeah.
This was the last time, though, that he would squander a point opportunity. Do you have that information?
Have a look at that. I'm currently just showing Josh a picture of Russell smacking Bottas on the head.
Okay, it is definitely there. In fact, why don't we add that to our Instagram?
We'll put that on the Instagram. You can go check it out.
3Pre1Cast on Instagram.
You can go check it out, and we'll put a picture up soon of George Russell smacking Valtteri Bottas, or we might put a video up, we'll see how we go.
Yeah, okay, so that's cool. Though from here things start going really well for Russell. He had some amazing qualifying results, including an 8th at the Austrian Grand Prix, the team's highest grid position since 2017. He finished the race 11th, having been passed by Fernando Alonso in the closing laps, which is another heartbreaking moment.
Yeah, it was like the veteran just pulling it away from the like child of the sport.
And I don't think Alonso was going, "Oh, but it's Russell's first point."
I don't think he cares.
No, he's like, "Give me that point, mate.
Come here, boy."
Yeah. But then at Hungary, he capitalized on multiple DNFs, which is the one I think where Bottas caused many, many crashes.
Oh, that's
off
right.
The first corner.
Yeah. That was really wet, wasn't it?
Yeah, really wet. Smacked into the back of Ricciardo. Or someone.
Yeah. Just a big pile up almost.
Big pile up. And, you know, the time when Bottas screws up is the time when Russell really shows his stuff.
It was great timing, eh?
Great timing. He scores an 8th, so he gets his first points. Ironically, Latifi gets 7th. So he got out. So that's quite funny that Latifi scored more points, even though. So it was Latifi's first points as well, but. The limelight was on Russell.
I remember that race. I also think he did put himself in another good position for Mercedes, because when I can't remember the exact layout of that race, but towards the end when Latifi was in front, George was holding somebody back behind him, so it was obviously the two Williams cars and George behind Latifi. I think there was somebody much quicker and George was just basically holding them up, and he was saying on the mic, basically prioritise Latifi, I'll hold this guy off, prioritise his race on the strategy.
Wow.
And I think that showed real team player sort of vibes from George, and I'm sure he was sort of doing that for the benefit of the team, but it probably was like music to the ears of Toto, who obviously is looking for a promising number two to Lewis in the final, you know, years of his career.
Completely.
Yeah,
that's actually really true. That was a great thing that Russell said, and yeah I do remember that now. Because obviously Bottas, his greatest strength at Mercedes was being an amazing number two, consistent, but never quite he was a good team player. He would always listen to team orders. He would help Lewis Hamilton
out. Passive with it.
Passive.
With strategy.
Yeah. So that was quite key to, as Bottas starts kind of declining in his skill and getting a really weird crash there in Hungary.
Yeah.
Russell shows that he can also be a team player and stuff. So that was his first points. And then the very next race, Russell mastered the Williams car in wet conditions to qualify third at Belgium. Do you remember us watching this? And it just
so
took
painful.
Ages. Yeah, so the qualifying was great.
Yeah.
And Russell with a Williams car, like, that's impressive. But then the race itself took ages to start because of, like, dangerous conditions.
The FIA were just refusing to start it, and they kept thinking it was going to get better, and it kept getting worse. So it was really frustrating.
Yeah, and then eventually they did this, like, farcical race, which was just three laps, no overtaking, no wheel-to-wheel racing, and they secured half points for that. But Russell was able to, you know, get a podium through that. He was able to stay in his third because it was qualifying and bring a Williams to the podium for, like, the first time since I actually don't know
ages.
The date.
Well over a decade.
Like, it would have been
well over a decade for sure. Like, I swear it was probably back in about 2005 or something like that.
Yeah, something crazy.
I
like
mean,
that
Williams obviously used to be iconic, but definitely haven't had a podium for a long time.
No, so Russell was able to give Williams a podium, which is quite nice after 3 years there. It would give them a podium and a good few points. No wonder they were trying so hard to hold on to him. But of course, as you see in Drive to Survive, you can actually see the moment where Wolf offers Russell the seat at Mercedes.
It was sick, but, like, behind the scenes, like, you know, like, it's just, it was such a cool moment to actually see, you know, the Mercedes boss have the conversation, and we got to sit in and watch and listen to him offer the seat to him.
Rolf goes, the bad news is you're racing Lewis Hamilton. The good news is you're doing it in Mercedes.
Yeah.
Let's go have dinner.
That's a cool moment.
Let's have some Pumpernickel, as Toto Wolff loves his, whatever, some kind of German food.
Pumpernickel.
Pumpernickel. It's like some kind of bread with seeds. He loves it.
Pumpernickel.
Yeah.
All right.
Classic German.
If you haven't learned anything on this podcast, you now learn that there's a German food called Pumpernickel.
Pumpernickel.
All right. Pumpernickel.
Exactly. And Toto Wolff loves it. So
great. Brilliant.
That's the link.
Well,
there.
Then I love it.
Yeah. So, of course, this year now, Russell is at Mercedes and has been Mr. Consistent, as we said at the start.
Nice.
And that is Russell's career.
Mr. Russell.
He's had some lows.
How many years would you predict until... Well, do you think he will ever win a world championship, firstly?
Ooh, good question. Okay. Yes. Yes, he will.
How long?
He is... If he's 1998, he'll be 23 now.
Yeah.
He has himself a good 8 or 9, maybe even 10 years, where he's kind of at his high skill level. When will he do it? I think Hamilton has to come out of the picture first. At least
wait
a couple years before he can... Yeah, because remember, he needs to do better than his teammate pretty much every time, and I don't think Hamilton's quite at that point where that he can outperform Hamilton every single race.
Yeah.
So wait a couple years for Hamilton to decline it a little bit,
mm-hmm.
3 or 4. Who knows how long Hamilton can hold on.
Yeah.
And then you need the Mercedes to come back to being as close as Red Bull. So I'm going to say that it will happen in the next 5 or 6 years. Let's say 6 years.
6 years from now, George Russell will be a world champion.
Yeah, he'll have one WDC under his name.
Nice. I mean, like, he's obviously the immediate names that he has to compete with is Max and, you know,
potentially Leclerc.
Well, Leclerc as well, and potentially even Sainz if he gets some more luck.
Yeah.
You know, like, it will, I think what we will see in the next 5 to 6 years is more potential winners than ever before per season.
And just
I think
imagine,
that's the way they're trying to put it.
It's so interesting to think of all the prodigies in there. Just imagine if Gasly goes over to Mercedes once Hamilton's done.
So
Norris gets himself either into a more competitive seat, or McLaren sort themselves out. He's up there.
I think he's backing McLaren to sort themselves out because he signed like an 8-year deal.
Yeah, one of the longest deals ever. So,
which is fair because he is like the golden boy there.
Yeah, he got a good... People seem to forget... Well, I was forgetting that Norris got quite a few good podiums and finishes for McLaren last year. Like, he was the Mr. Consistent of last year.
He's a great driver. Like, I mean, obviously, McLaren fan here, but I really hope that you can just sort themselves out a proper car and return back to the glory days, because there's so much history there. And if you want to know the history, I recommend you go and check out the last episode.
A very good comprehensive history from Rory Hockley himself.
It's not too bad, I guess.
Not too bad.
No, check it out if you're interested.
Yeah.
Well, that was a George Russell little moment there, went through his, and we'll lead on to the next section. And it can be a bit of a quick one, because I'm sure everyone's eager to get to this. We'll try and crank call Stephen if we've got time.
Yeah.
But I thought, Josh, to change up a tune. So we often do a lot of history. We talk about a lot of facts of Formula One. But for this week, we don't have our F1 computer brain Stephen with us. So I thought, let's do something a bit silly. Josh, I'm giving you a completely blank Formula One team. And I want you to tell me if Bingham Racing or whatever the hell it was going to be was going to go into F1. What's the name? Who on the grid are you going to try and sign? What boss would you try and sign? What are the colours of the car? What information can you give me about a Bingham Racing
team? Bingham Racing, I mean, first of all, it's going to be something like Bingham, maybe even Bingzamo. Because Bingzamo is the brand of a lot of things in my family. So Bingzamo Racing.
Your gaming name is Bingzamo.
Yes. And some other things along the way.
Your password?
Oh. No. No, Bingzamo Racing is going to be the one.
Okay, Bingzamo Racing. Kind of like on the similar lines of like Andretti, an iconic.
It's going to be
Bill McLaren.
Williams. Of course, Bill McLaren, we know who he's from now.
Was it Bruce McLaren? I always get that. I think it's Bruce McLaren. That's really awkward.
Yeah, no.
I mean, you know, lots of iconic last names, and now the next one.
We're going to have Bingzamo in there. Yes, Bingzamo is going to get in there, and he's going to sign on. I think we're going to come in with a lot of money.
A lot of money.
We're not going to just faff around with some F2 winner who might show some promise. We're going to go straight in there and hire two super solid F1 experienced men.
Interesting.
So that's what we're going to do. We're just big money, Bingzamo.
And these guys have to be somewhat realistic, by the way. Like, I don't want you to come in and say Max and Lewis and just easily just trollop the field for the next few years. I mean, there's some people
that
are
unguessable.
No,
let's say that Max and Lewis are way too ingrained in their teams. We need people that are kind of on the...
Potentially need a seat.
And they need a seat. So Gasly. It's got to be Gasly, because he has been itching to, you know, get into a competitive seat. And what more of a competitive car can you get than the Bingzamo car?
The Bingzamo Racing team is... He'll be chomping at the bit.
So we got Gasly, and alongside Gasly, we might put a little... could be a little Bottas.
A little Bottas,
because he's a good number two.
What if he's quite happy at Alfa Romeo?
Look, you know, he's happy at Alfa Romeo, but Bingzamo is the more competitive car.
He's got the big money at Bingzamo.
Money, and look, we're not going to tell him that he's a number two. We're just going to assume that he's going to...
You're going to wolf him.
Mercedes. But we can see that he is still able to get the results that's needed, so he will be a good number two.
So Gasly and Bottas.
Gasly and Bottas. What's the theme?
Oh, sorry, actually, no, before we go to the theme and the colours and stuff, what boss are you going to put in there? Who are you going to hire to be the racing director?
Okay, so I want someone who has been successful. I don't really like the idea of Otmar, because he's kind of been back and forth across teams.
That's
and
true.
Hasn't really led a team to much in the way of anything. Well, that's harsh, but you know. can't be Cyril, because he's too emotional. I need someone.
Cyril, I've been
doing it. Look, I love Horner and Wolf, but look, they're too ingrained in their teams.
Yeah, fair.
So we're going to grab Gunther.
Oh.
We're going to grab Gunther.
Is that good for the PR?
Well, that's the kind of vibe we're going for here.
Fair.
You've got to be able to call your drivers all sorts of names, you know, if they're not up to scratch.
I mean, look at these guys. They're young. Most of them are good looking. They've got all the money in the world. They fly around the world racing cars. Sometimes you need someone to get them in line, right?
Yeah, and Gunther, for those that don't know, is the Haas team principal. And if you watch any of the Drive to Survive seasons, you will see some great Gunther footage.
Gunther moments.
He's a very, like, he's actually a really nice dude.
Seems to be, yeah.
Really nice, but he doesn't shy away from a few, you know, name calling.
Oh, yeah, he goes in.
Yeah, he goes in, but he's got a great sense of humour, and he's actually quite good with the fans as well. So Gunther is there. He's a hard worker.
Nice.
Yeah, he will head this new team.
And what colour is your car?
Now, what colours have we got on the grid? Because I want something different.
Yeah, right.
You know, orange, that's taken. Red.
Green's even taken.
Even green. Because I was going to say, like, my favourite colour is, like, a khaki dark green. Mm. I wonder if you could do, like, a dark green, because...
Aston Martin.
Yeah, it's kind of a foresty,
yeah,
but maybe too similar.
Could be.
What's a great colour scheme?
Your teammate. You make the decision. I'm just your advisor.
We got the blues. Got the reds. Oh, man. I mean, like, obviously the logo of the Bingsmo is going to be the orange serpent. The iconic orange serpent.
For context, Josh's Xbox avatar was an orange serpent.
So and everyone loves it.
Everyone loves
it. And when I say everyone, I mean you and the other pre, Stephen.
Yeah.
Love it.
Yeah, the other pre.
So it'll be an orange serpent with a blue background. So we're going to go orange and blue.
Okay, nice.
Orange and blue with a nice pattern. Orange and blue also happen to be the colour of my braces. So I always loved that colour combo.
Oh, great. I'm sure it gives you happy memories.
Exactly. Great times. So that's what I've got going. Did you want to fire off on...
I will rattle off my team.
Go on. Tell me.
So you've got a lot of time to think.
You've got some time to think. Okay.
And we want to have enough time to give Stephen a prank call. So, quite simply, Pumpernickel Racing is the team name.
Yeah, you've been thinking about this one for a while.
For a long time. I imagine... I don't know what Pumpernickel is, but... I think it's probably a brown food. It just, to me, it feels like a brown food. So the car's brown.
Oh,
it's
man.
Brown with highlights of slightly beigey brown.
You're very right. Pumpernickel is brown.
Can you turn it around? Can I have a look at it? I'll describe what it is. What am I looking at? It's like a loaf of bread.
Just like rye bread.
Okay, and so it's going to be a brown car with little, like, grains, almost images on it. So we're really embracing the Pumpernickel brand.
I actually really love brown because it's never been done.
I think for a team boss, I have Zach Brown.
Yes, Zach Brown.
He looks like he'd eat a lot of Pumpernickel.
He loves the Pumpernickel.
Yeah. And drivers?
What do you got for drivers?
Oh, I'm almost more interested in building a brand than a successful racing team.
Yeah, sure.
So I'm going to go for charisma.
Ooh.
So
who's got the charisma?
I think we'll go for...
Don't say Daniel Ricciardo.
Lance Stroll.
In terms of charisma. Oh.
No.
Pumpernickel has more charisma. Just the bread itself.
No, jokes aside, who would I sign? I would agree with you. Pierre Gasly, he's like itching for somewhere else to go. Obviously, I'd try and provide him that. And then I think I would try and disrupt the grid and go, Checo Perez, mate.
You are
class and you should not be a driver number two.
Mm-hmm.
Here over here at Pumpernickel Racing, I can promise you that we'll do an Aston Martin and copy the Red Bull setup. And we'll get you into that number one seat, and Pierre Gasly will just have to deal with it.
Yeah, because we kind of root for Perez. We love a bit of Perez.
Checo.
He's jumped between a few teams. I think he'll be well seasoned at getting along with a new pit crew team.
Do you know what else is well seasoned?
What?
Pumpernickel, man.
Exactly.
It's just match made in heaven.
Oh man, like I'm hungry just talking about this stuff.
God.
Look, go get yourself some Pumpernickel right now.
Well. Yes, yeah, speaking of Pumpernickel, Stephen is working, and we won't disclose where he works, but he's working. We're going to give it a go. We're gonna try and call him, and he'll pick up. He won't know it's us, because we're going to call on the studio phone. And I'm going to play the Formula One soundtrack through my phone, down into his ear, and your ears. And we're just going to see how he reacts. We hope it's radio show friendly, so apologies if it's not. It should be. Shouldn't have too much of a bad mouth on him. But we're just trying to set up the logistics. Now, this might not work. This could be a... Oh, it's going through. Okay. Bear with. Please pick up.
Come on.
Come on, Stephen.
Don't
let us down.
Unknown number, like it could be.
Come on,
could be a customer.
It's not
a
dodgy sales, we promise.
Come on, what could he possibly be doing? We might give it one more call after this. Like,
we could call him on our personal number and then he might pick up.
Yeah?
We could give that a go.
Yeah. Might be more of a bet.
Yeah.
I can just do it, put him on speaker on the phone.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Doesn't sound like he's going to pick up.
Okay, how do I hang this up?
I have no idea. Just lift up the phone maybe and dot it down. As you can see, we're experts here at the Plains FM studio.
Okay, goodbye. Let's call him on this.
Planned professionals. Okay. All right, here we go.
Here we go.
He should pick this up. That's good.
Hello, what's up? Calling me?
Yes.
What's up?
What's up? You're live. You're live on air.
I'm live on air.
You're live on air.
Oh,
did you get a phone call before?
Did I get a phone
from an unknown number?
No, I don't believe so. Oh, sorry.
Damn, because we tried to call you through the studio phone. And we were hoping that then we could play this F1 music and see if you'd catch on to it.
But you didn't pick up.
Oh,
so you,
right.
Wait, did you not even get the phone to ring?
No, maybe you needed to push a number to dial out, but no.
It does say that. I thought I pressed that, but oh well. We got you here now, Stephen.
Yep.
Okay.
We've only got 5 minutes. I don't know. How much time have you got there?
Could you give us like two minutes of your time?
I've got a couple of minutes.
That's all we want from you.
What did you think of Canada?
Go on.
it was an interesting race. Certainly, good for Red Bull to see Verstappen.
Yeah, leading from the start, no real question.
Yeah, I thought it was a big opportunity for Sainz that ultimately he couldn't capitalise on. That, you know, it was a chance for him to overtake Verstappen and really assert himself as a championship contender is sort of my take on it. Whereas he sort of in the post-race spun it as, you know, I was quick, I was the quickest man on track and I'm encouraged by that. But I think the fact that he couldn't pull off an overtake on Verstappen was disappointing and a missed opportunity for him. You know, I think had he done that, won the race, it would have probably hopefully kick-started his campaign, but again it was, you know, another second place.
Yeah, we've noticed he's had a few of those and not quite a win yet, despite
he's really not at harmony with that, with Ferrari's 2022 car, and it seems now that you've got in Red Bull, you know, both Perez and Verstappen are race winners this year. Leclerc's a race winner, and now, you know, Sainz is kind of the old one out.
Yeah, because they've both obviously done 150 races, him and Verstappen, so there's quite a difference there and stuff. Now, we have another question for you.
Sure.
What are your thoughts on a new F1 team headed by us three named Pumpernickel Racing?
Pumpernickel Racing, Where does that name come from is my first question.
So Pumpernickel is the delicious German bread that Toto Wolff can't stop raving about on Drive to Survive.
So
all he talks about now.
It's all he talks about. And Brewery here suggested a beautiful colour scheme of brown for the car. Brown with, you know, little white dots to signify Pumpernickel.
I see. The podcast has really gone downhill.
Downhill.
We need you back. We want you back.
I'm sorry I couldn't be there. But the other question with, if you want to start a F1 team, is who's going to fund this multi-million dollar enterprise?
Oh, it's going to be the combined empires of our dads.
Yeah.
Business empires.
We'll just hit up our parents and hope that they can scrape together. I mean, how much do they need for a Formula One team? What, like 20 grand?
Like 20 grand in 1 year, mate.
You know, the budget cap's only $130 million.
We'll have a whiff around.
Under the couch,
you know,
tonight or
check the sofas.
Let's do it. And Steve, who would you put as your two drivers in our Pumpernickel team?
And I can choose any drivers on the current grid.
Somewhat realistically.
Well, I think there's a lot of talk about Pierre Gasly, where he's going to end up. So that would be an opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, you've really put me on the spot here. I mean, you've got to have the GOAT in there, don't you?
Gotifi. Do you know what? We forgot about Gotifi.
The rumour mill is that he's going to be out of a seat next year for Oscar.
Oh, that's
Piastri,
unlucky
so
for him.
He could be a free agent.
You're right. In fact, that would be a perfect... He could be a number two to Gasly. I mean, we both brought up Gasly. I said Bottas as a number two.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
What did you
say? I said him from Alpha, though.
Yeah. Mm. I said Checo, and we could convince him that he'll be a number one.
Yeah.
With the very competitive car that Pumpernickel provides.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think just because Gasly's a realistic, you know, to stay with AlphaTauri for another year, I just don't see it happening. I think he's going to go, he's going to move somewhere in 2023.
Yeah.
And if we can get our team set up by then, we might be able to capitalise.
Let's do it. Thank you, Stephen.
Thank you, Stephen. We'll let you go, and thanks for picking up and having a chat with us.
Yeah, no, happy to join the show in a reduced form this week, but back to full service in a fortnight's time.
Yeah, mate,
good
we'll
stuff.
See you then.
Right, see
love you, mate. Bye.
And that was the third pre, just tuning in there briefly.
Briefly.
It's been a great show.
It's been a good show.
Thoroughly enjoyed your presence, Josh. Thank you.
No worries, Rory. It's been actually really good.
It's been good.
Thank
we've
you
covered
for
off some good, cool things, and we've got Silverstone coming up, and that's going to be very exciting.
Yes, exactly. So we will catch all of you guys in 2 weeks.
2 weeks' time. Feel free to check out our Instagram. Like I said, we're going to put that picture of George Russell smacking Valtteri Bottas up
exactly,
there, so you want to go
context.
Check that out.
And maybe we'll also post a picture of Pumpernickel Brie.
Yeah, we'll get Pumpernickel out there so you can see what our sort of theme is. And also check out our TikTok. We've got a few things going off pretty well over there.
Yeah, it's actually under name at JoshBingham66 at the moment.
Yep.
But we put F1 content
3-3-1 cast content's all going out there, but check out our Instagram. We're going to keep things coming out there. It should be nice and entertaining for you guys. But yeah, like we said, in a fortnight's time we'll be back. We'll be talking about the Silverstone Grand Prix that's just happened,
the latest happenings.
Yeah,
always
covered here. 3-3-1 cast.
Goodbye
guys, we'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to 3-3-1 cast. If you want to catch up on any of our episodes, check us out on Plains FM, Apple Podcast, or Spotify.
Come and say hi to us on Instagram and TikTok at 3-3-1 cast.